Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor here at How Stuff Works. And sitting next to me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Come with me if you want to live.
Oh, no. You went there, did you?
I did already. We're gonna talk about cyborgs. And I would like to apologize to the anonymous listener out there who sent me the request that we do an episode about cyborgs. I did a search because I know I had seen it. But I did a search in my email and could not find that request. So to whomever it was that sent that request, I apologize, but hopefully you'll enjoy what we have to tell you.
All right, then. So where should we start?
Let's start by defining what a cyborg is.
That's good, because the first thing I had was the definition from Merriam-Webster.
Which hit me says, with it.
a cyborg is a bionic human, which really didn't tell me anything. So I had to look up bionic because I figured that would give me a clue. And
right.
They do say that bionic means, quote, having normal biological capability or performance enhanced by or as if by electronic or electromechanical devices, end quote. So basically a biological person who is enhanced in some way by technology.
Interesting. When I did a search for a good definition of cyborg, the first thing I got was cybernetic organism, which, like your definition, does not help you out a whole lot. however, cybernetics is a study of human control functions and of mechanical and electronic systems designed to replace them, mm-hmm. involving the application of statistical mechanics to communication engineering. So really, cybernetics is more than just computers or computing systems. It's also biology, neuroscience, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're curious as to where the word cybernetics comes from, it has a Greek origin meaning terminator. No, I'm sorry. It means helmsman or steersman.
Hmm, okay.
So someone who pilots a ship.
Okay, then. You know, it's funny because you're all Terminator, but when I started thinking of cyborgs, I was thinking more along the lines of the $6 million man or the bionic woman.
Right.
Even Neuromancer.
Clearly, the $6 million man is science fiction, because there's no way you'd be able to build that sucker for $6 million.
Well, this was the 1970s.
Right. Well, that's true. $6 million then was about $30 trillion. So, but
somebody's going to write in and go, no, it's not.
So cybernetics, that was a term that was introduced by Norbert Wiener.
Okay.
Or Wiener, if you prefer.
Yeah.
That appeared in 1948.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about, is cyborg really within just the realm of science fiction, or is this reality?
Well, that's a good question. I would say it's reality, but the reality is not nearly as exciting and fun as science fiction makes it seem.
I think it all depends upon the particular cybernetic application you're talking about, mm-hmm. and the purpose for that application. Because for some people, I would say that cybernetics and cyborg studies in particular are incredibly interesting,
mm-hmm.
mainly because a lot of people are regaining use of certain senses or limbs that they may not otherwise be able to use due to cybernetics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we can talk a little bit. How did you want to talk about this?
I did a lot of my research on a recent article written for the site. You know, will we ever be able to communicate with only our minds?
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with that article.
Yes. Well, I mean, ladies and gentlemen of the podcast, this is something that Jonathan wrote about just a few days ago. And as a matter of fact, as we are speaking, it hasn't actually been published on the site, but probably will be by the time that you're listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fascinating because, you know, the idea that we would be able to communicate with our minds, you know, the idea was telepathic communication.
Right.
As it turns out, it's more like, can you find some kind of technology that will help you do that? And the answer is yes.
Yeah. If you're going by the strictest definition, can we communicate with only our minds? The answer is really no, because we do need something in addition to our own minds in order to transmit the thought to someone else. But we're actually making progress in doing that, and it's all because of what we call brain-computer interfaces.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much what it sounds like. It's an interface that allows you to control or input data into a computer using your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these use EEGs. The sensors you see that are hooked up to strategic points upon your noggin. They detect the electric impulses in your brain and can interpret those impulses. You know, we've studied the brain enough to know, hey, when you think lift my left arm, this area of your brain lights up. When you think lift my right arm, this area of the brain lights up. So by doing that, even though we don't technically understand all of the mechanics behind it,
mm-hmm.
we know enough where we can build a computer interface system to kind of take advantage of that. Now, this is in its most primitive form right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's really not, we haven't reached a point where you can put on, you know, your thinking cap to, for lack of a better word, and have someone else put a similar cap on. And then you think, hey, I'm hungry. Would you like to go get some pizza? And then the other person receives that thought and can understand it. We're not there yet. The experiment that I wrote about within that article was fascinating,
mm-hmm.
but it involved actually thinking, I want to lift my left arm or I want to lift my right arm.
Right.
The computer would receive the electric signals that were zapping around in the subject's brain.
Yeah.
And could interpret that. And so if I don't have the article in front of me, but I think left arm was a 0 and right arm was a 1.
I think so.
So if the subject thought, I'm going to lift my left arm, the computer interpreted it as a 0. If the subject thought, I'm going to lift my right arm, the computer interpreted it as a 1. The computer then sent this series of zeros and ones to a second machine that mm-hmm. was in a remote location. And that would interpret it as, you know, it would get a 0 or a 1. It would then send a series of signals to a lamp, an LED lamp.
Yeah.
Which would flash in a very, very fast series of flashes, depending on whether it was a 0 or a 1. It was two different series, but it was such a almost random looking and quick series of flashes that humans wouldn't be able to say, oh, that was a 0 or that was a 1. They would just see, oh, that was a lot of flashes. Oh, that was a different, slightly different set of flashes. Well, the brain is enough, can actually record, you know, what the different series of flashes are. You're not conscious of it, but your brain is picking it up. And by wearing, by the subject B wearing an EEG setup, the EEG would detect the signals in the brain that said, hey, this is the series of flashes that lit up. That means that it was a zero,
mm-hmm.
or that means it was a one. And so without using any kind of keyboard or anything, subject one could send a series of zeros and ones to subject two, or subject A and B, I think is what I said originally.
Mm-hmm.
And subject B would receive them. Now, you're not, again, you would need a third computer really, mm-hmm. to interpret those brain signals so that subject B knows what kind of message they got.
Right.
It would almost be like if I wrote to you using a language that you weren't familiar with. You could read it, but you have no idea what the meaning is.
Right.
You would have to have something translate it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not quite to the point yet where we can send an actual thought and have someone consciously understand it. But the progress has been remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, in another, not exactly similar vein, but I read an article in Wired magazine by Clive Thompson, and it was about what he was calling the cyborg advantage. And this is the title's way sexier than the content, but it's about chess, actually. And you remember Garry Kasparov.
Oh yeah,
who beat and then lost to the IBM computer Deep Blue.
Yes, yes, he won I think in 96 and then in a rematch in 97 lost in a series of six games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, according to Thompson's article, he's been working on a situation in which he pairs computers and humans, because basically the humans know how to make sense of the computer decision. So it's like playing chess with a laptop, and you make the laptop your partner, and you say, okay, well, you know, the other player just made this move. What do you think, computer? The computer says the logical move is to do this. And the human can either accept that decision and play that piece, or say, you know what? I have the feeling he's up to something, and I'm not going to make that move. I'm going to make this move. And so the other player is able to, you know, make a decision based on the computer intelligence. It's sort of like, you know, it actually kind of reminded me of meteorologists going, well, you know, the computer models say.
Right, right.
But basically there was a 2005 tournament in which basically anything went. So it was possible to participate in this tournament as a computer human pairing. And, there were a couple 20 somethings with an off the shelf PC essentially, who did better than the really, you know, like the grand masters of chess, or, you know, the heavy duty computer models. And so basically the two of them were stronger than a computer or a really talented chess player. So, you know, I don't know how scientific that is, but it's an interesting thought to think, you know, maybe the augmentation of a human with computer technology, is a nice balance in between the two.
That's actually, that reminds me a lot of what Professor Kevin Warwick talks about in his various papers and experiments that he's performed. He's a professor at the Cybernetics Institute at the University of Reading in the UK. And
yeah, you mentioned him in your article.
Right. And Warwick, he was known for doing some things that some people have kind of called stunts. But he was sort of using them as a way, a proof of concept for a cyborg future.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1998, he did this experiment where he had a doctor implant an RFID chip in him.
Mm-hmm.
And the chip would allow him to walk through the laboratory and do things like open doors and turn on lights and whatever without actually having to move a muscle, because it just detected the chip and then the system reacted. Now, this really has limited use when you think about it. I mean, the risks you're taking by having something implanted in your body just to turn on lights, that seems like that's not really a good use of your time. I mean, most of us can achieve this by carrying around a little card that has a chip in it. That doesn't require surgery.
True.
But was doing this as a proof of concept.
Sure.
And
sure.
I don't think it's still in him. I think in every single case he's had the various things removed after the experiment was over.
You know, Also, just a side benefit of that, if he runs away from home, they'll be able to track him down.
Yeah. So in 2002, he had a 100 electrode array surgically implanted into his left arm.
Yes.
And this allowed him to plug it into a it would kind of look like this plastic collar almost that would, mm-hmm. that would close around his arm. It looked very much like a sort of Star Trek kind of device. And some wires would attach to plastic collar around his arm, mm-hmm. and he would be able to do things like control robotic hands remotely. And what was happening was that, you know, your nervous system works through electrical impulses. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about in the brain, well, the same is true all throughout your nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So you are a walking electrical being,
yes.
at least as far as your nervous system is concerned. So by pairing these electrodes with the nerve endings in his arm, he was able to send electric signals through his nervous system, which the computer could interpret as, oh, this means open the robotic hand. This means close the robotic hand. And to keep it simple, they pretty much kept it the same as opening and closing his own hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that meant that it showed that you could control various mechanical devices through your own nervous system. Now, granted, this is not a brain computer interface. This is nerve computer interface.
Right, right. That's
so. Yeah,
it seems like that would be much simpler to organize.
Compared to a brain computer interface, it is much simpler. However, it's still incredibly complicated.
Yeah,
And of course, you have lots of things to worry about. I mean, whenever you're surgically implanting foreign materials into a human body, there are a lot of different things you have to worry about, like infection, rejection, that kind of thing. I have to worry about rejection every day of my life. at any rate, so that's a sidebar. He then went on to have another interesting experiment where his wife had a similar, a slightly more primitive implant in put into her arm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two were connected.
Yeah, I wonder how he talked her into that.
I don't know. I could never talk my wife into doing something like that. She'd be like, yeah, whatever. But at any rate, the way the connection worked was that whenever his wife opened or closed her hand, he would get an impulse through his nervous system and would, he said, feel a pulse. He mm-hmm. did not really define how it felt. So I'm really curious as to what kind of sensation is he talking about? Like, how did he perceive? I know that he did perceive, or at least he claims to have perceived, his wife opening and closing her hand. And that seems like it's an easy enough thing to test.
Yeah.
You know, you could keep them both separate. And as long as the connection was good, you know, just have him indicate whenever she opened or closed her hand. And if it matched up, then, you know, all right, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
But, he did not go into what it felt like.
Right.
So I don't know what his actual perception was, but this was another way of saying, hey, you know, maybe we'll get to a point where, again, we'll be able to communicate. Actually, they could, theoretically, at least she could communicate to him remotely just through Morse code by opening and closing her hand.
True.
But that's clearly
so long as the connection is
good,
robust
right.
enough to
right.
handle it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know how good that connection was, like how far away they could be from each other, or if it was through the internet connection or anything like that. That I got the least amount of information about that particular experiment.
Yeah.
But Warwick's point is that cybernetics can give us a lot of enhanced abilities that we otherwise would never have access to. So not just the ability to communicate remotely, which is phenomenal, but imagine being able to tap into the network of information on the internet mm-hmm. through your brain.
Yeah, that again sort of reminds me of like the Matrix and Neuromancer, where, you know, you plug something in and suddenly you have access to all this information, either
right.
stored, well, in those cases, more like an ebook where you can, you know, just have access to that without being connected to the internet.
Now, what's interesting here is you would remember things. It's like mm-hmm. memory, right? Like you would be able to say, huh, when was the Magna Carta signed? And
right.
then you access the internet through your brain and like, oh, it's 1215. But
no, it's not. It's a three. Oh,
the year 1215.
Got it.
King John, Magna Carta. Work with me here. So, but yes, you could recall facts, but you wouldn't necessarily be smarter. You would just remember a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it would sort of be like the chess versus, you know, the chess situation where the computer is acting on logic. It knows, you know, this is a logical move. It, you know, in the past, many people have used this, and in the end result was a win.
Yeah.
But
72% of the time that people use this move, they went on to win the match.
Yeah, kind of exactly. And you know, the human is using intuition and is able to use human intelligence to make sense of that information.
Right.
So, you know, having the opportunity to use that information from, you know, downloaded online, but you're right. You wouldn't be able to do anything other than just simply know the fact. You might win a lot of Jeopardy games.
Right, but you wouldn't be able to. Let's say you needed to look up a particular formula for some sort of mathematical equation.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to find the formula, but that doesn't mean you would understand it.
Right.
Right? So there's that barrier there. Now, that's not to say that there wouldn't be other developments, cybernetic developments, that would allow you to have much more, say, processing power in your brain as well, mm-hmm. where maybe you don't have to understand it. You've got the computer working there, which Warwick's point was that frees up your brain to do other things like mm-hmm. create poetry or, you know, watch The Simpsons. At any rate, other ways you could enhance it, not just through being able to access information, mm-hmm. but to sense things that human beings are unable otherwise to sense, like ultrasonic frequencies or light that's outside of the visible spectrum.
Right.
You know, you would be able to maybe create a cybernetic implant that would allow you to see X-rays.
Provided, of course, your eyes are capable of seeing them.
Well, again, why would it have to be an eye? You could build a sensor.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Let's say that you don't do it through your eyes. Let's say that you have a sensor placed somewhere else on your body that, you know, we think of it as seeing.
I see what you're saying.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be seeing.
Yeah.
That's Warwick's point, is that we already think in such a narrow set of parameters that cybernetics really blows all that out of the water. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you become this machine or slash human that's capable of sensing, a significant more information about your environment and even be able to interpret it more because you could tap into, say, the internet remotely. Mm-hmm. Now, this raises a lot of ethical problems.
I sense us treading closer to the singularity with this conversation.
Yeah, it does kind of get – it definitely goes to that same sort of area. But one of the ethical issues is who is able to do this? Mm-hmm. Should they do it?
Right.
And if they can do it and they want to do it, what does that mean for the people who either cannot do it or don't want to? Are they left behind? Do we become two different species of creatures because you would have the cyborgs who would suddenly have access to all this information and sensory information that otherwise they wouldn't have, and the rest of us would just be bags of meat?
The best kind of sneeches are sneeches without.
Yeah, so there you go. Like, you know, these are questions we don't have answers to.
Right.
I mean, for one thing, the technology is nowhere near there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And some might argue that, hey, since we can't do it yet, why are we wasting time worrying about it? But my point is, it's better to think about these things ahead of time before they become a real issue.
Yeah.
You know, and it may turn out that this is one of those things where science leaps far ahead of ethics or the law, and it only becomes a problem, you know, or it becomes a problem and then we address it, as opposed to let's think about this now and try and address it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, you were about to say.
Well, no, I was going to say that, you know, it hasn't stopped it from becoming a reality in other circumstances.
Very good. Yeah, that's true.
You know, but there's just not, again, as flashy as those experiments that we were just discussing. I mean, things like, you know, Barney Clark's first artificial heart, you know,
right.
That was a technological advancement, or a pacemaker, for example, is mm-hmm. an electronic device that is implanted in somebody to help people monitor their heart rhythms and make them more regular.
Yeah, there's some really phenomenal technology that's already in fairly common use out there that really kind of falls right into this cyborg category. I mentioned cochlear implants earlier. That's definitely something that would fit. So a cochlear implant, that's an electronic device, and it's designed to help people who have severe hearing loss or who are even deaf be able to perceive sound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're perceiving it differently than the way people who have normal hearing would perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly the same thing. A cochlear implant, it has a microphone, so that's what's picking up the sound from the environment. It usually has a speech processor, which kind of helps arrange that sound to help the listener make sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the transmitter sends signals to an electrode array, which sends the impulses to various regions on the auditory nerve. So you're getting the signals sent directly to the auditory nerve. It's not passing through the regular organs of the ear, mm-hmm. you know. And so people who have cochlear implants can actually perceive sound. Again, it's not exactly the same kind of sound that we perceive, but with training, they can completely hear and be able to hold conversations and differentiate different sounds. It's just it's almost impossible to really – like I can't compare the two because clearly I mean I just have normal hearing. I don't have a cochlear implant, so I couldn't tell you what the differences are. Like I couldn't give you any kind of – meaningful description between the two, but it is, right. it is a common, well, not common might not be the right word, but it is in use.
It is not uncommon.
Yeah. It's not like there's only three people walking right. around experimentally. I mean, there are thousands of these.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really revolutionized that, you know, the way we treat people who have severe hearing loss.
Yeah. But it's not like people are walking around like Victor Stone from the Teen Titans, otherwise known as Cyborg, who has, you know, detachable hands that you can refit with lasers to fight bad guys with. So
no, cochlear implants don't do that.
Well, no, I'm just saying it's not flashy or showy or something like that where you have a lot of that going on.
Well, and then there's did you read up on bionic eyes?
Bionic eyes?
Yeah, cybernetic eyes.
No, actually, well, I mean, $6 million man had one.
Right. so this is not as flashy as that either.
No, exactly.
So the current state of the cybernetic eye, it's still really fascinating, but it's one of those things where when you hear the term, you immediately kind of imagine what it must be like.
Mm-hmm.
And chances are your imagination is already jumping leaps and bounds of
yeah,
beyond the technology. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. So currently the state of cybernetic eyes, it's usually a system that involves a pair of glasses that the sight impaired person wears, and there are cameras mounted All onto right. the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So the cameras are the one things that are picking up the images, sending signals to a transmitter, which then transmits it to an implant. There's actually an implant that is surgically attached to the rear of the retina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that sends the signals to the visual cortex of the brain.
So you're basically bypassing your biological eyes.
Yeah. You're using the eye as a lens,
mm-hmm.
but that's about it. No, you're not. You're using the camera as a lens, but the eye, yes, you're essentially saying, okay, well, the eyes are not working the way they should.
Right.
You've got the kind of a bionic retina
mm-hmm.
attached to the back of the eye. So yes, you are bypassing the normal,
mm-hmm.
The normal eyes. And you don't really get an image the way we think of images. You get a difference of light or dark,
mm-hmm.
and it's made up of just a few dozen pixels.
Right.
So really, it's good for detecting light environments, dark environments, and motion.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really have a lot there to really be able to recognize actual shapes, or at least not really distinctly. I mean, with training, people who have these have been able to recognize certain shapes, but it takes a while because it's not a very high resolution picture. In fact, it's about as low resolution as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But the hope is that maybe in the future you would be able to develop this, not you, Chris, because you've got other things to do, but that scientists would be able to develop this to the point where people who were using them would be able to recognize faces or perhaps even read large print books.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're well away from that right now,
yeah.
but there's a lot of work going into it.
And it also sounds a little bit like some of the work that Dean Kamen has been doing.
Right. Like
we
the Luke
talked
arm.
About it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of course, we talked about that in a previous podcast.
Right.
That was last year.
Yeah. We talked about that was a focus on Kamen. We haven't done a focus on a very long time.
Yeah.
But, we'll have to do that at some point.
But he's been working with cybernetics and ways to create artificial limbs that are basically respond to nerve impulses and get people to move.
And he's been very successful as far as designing the limbs and having them be you know, a good weight and have a lot of articulation, less successful with the nerve interface. He's been using other interfaces in the meantime while the scientists have been trying to perfect the nerve device interface.
Right.
So things like, you know, foot pedals that are in, that you wear in your shoes and you use your toes to actually, you know, control the arm.
Interesting.
So you can make the wrist turn or the fist open or close just by moving your toes a certain way.
Yeah.
But yeah, the goal, of course, is that eventually you would be able to implant, wires within the nervous system and be able to control the arm without having to use some other, like, extra control system. Now, there are a lot of other issues that I think of when it comes to cybernetics and cyborgs. It's not just, you know, should we do it? I think of things like my electronics tends to break down.
Yeah.
I would hate for my eye to stop working.
Well, I mean, but for a lot of people, it does.
I mean,
you know, biological tissue can break too.
Biologically, it can. And you might even argue that, hey, Jonathan, if your eyes were mechanical, you could have them fixed. Whereas when they're biological, that may not be an option. And yeah, you got a good argument there. I'm just saying I don't want to be like, you know, piloting my flying car while I get the blue screen of death over both eyes. Now, I'm not saying that my eyes would necessarily be running Windows 12, but who knows?
It's an interesting thought, though.
Well, and I mean, I do. There are other things you got to worry about. Like I said, with the just the whole introducing any kind of foreign object into the body, there are all these concerns you have to have that are that go beyond just the ethical implications. I mean, there are actual, like, you know, biological health implications as well. But
not to mention all the lead that would be in the soldering for that.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
well, moving on then. I think this was a good discussion about cyborgs. So, yeah, I think we're on our way to seeing at least a variation of the cyborg in science fiction become a reality.
Sure,
it may not be quite as sexy as the Terminator.
No, probably not. At least not in the short run.
No, but you know, Skynet's coming, so don't worry, guys.
All right.
Well, I guess that pretty much wraps up this discussion. If any of you have any comments, questions, suggestions, things like that, you can write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And we have articles on the website right now that cover things from bionic eyes to cochlear implants and being able to communicate telepathically with the use of computers. Hopefully that'll be up by the time this episode goes live. So you should check that out. Remember, that's howstuffworks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.